folks. Have a great month and see you in February. You're listening to Radio Kapwa on CKUT 90.3 FM, where all Filipinos are Filipino enough.
Hello, Kapwa, and welcome back to Tita Talks, the podcast to inspire thoughtful action, live on Radio Kapwa. Recording today from Tulum, Mexico, which is where I'll be for the next little bit here. And on today's episode, we are kind of continuing the laid-off chronicles. We started talking about it in the episode before this, about untethering my identity from my career and how that kind of lays the groundwork for what we're getting into today. So through this time, you know, it's end of January, I think we're all in kind of this slower moving season, which I love. And if I could name the season that I'm currently in and this season of unemployment and being laid off, I would certainly call it a soft and unhurried season. So in today's episode, we are going to kind of build off the last episode on kind of unemployment and being laid off and being okay with it. And I'm going to share some of the reflection questions, activities, things I've been up to kind of since I left Winnipeg after the holidays and landed in Tulum, what that rest practice has looked like, some of the challenges around it, and some reflection questions for us to kind of sit with and maybe help us to ease into this kind of cold, wintry season of, again, what I like to call a soft and unhurried season. So I am no stranger to having periods of unemployment, and this is the first time I've been laid off, but I have certainly quit jobs without a solid plan in place. That's very 2020, start of the pandemic, when I lost my mind. I think we did actually already cover that in an episode. I've been fired from jobs, and the feeling is always, the way I can describe it is kind of, it feels like my legs are chopped off. Like, I am still functioning all the way up here. This top half is still doing stuff, has to do things, has to show up in my life, but I don't know where I'm going. I don't have legs to move myself in a certain direction. I feel a little bit stuck, a little bit frozen. And because I've had some experience in this in the past, in having a lot of free space, going into this season now of unemployment, I was very mindful of being intentional with the time. So when I got laid off, it was kind of a crazy time. Like, I was in Miami when it happened. I had about a week or so before I was heading back to Winnipeg. I just took that week off work because I was angry and I just sat at the beach and cried for most of it. And then I returned back to Winnipeg where things were kind of go, go, go. I was you know, catching up with family, catching up with friends, and it's, you know, Christmas holidays, lots to do, and events, things like that. So it was kind of a whirlwind 3 weeks in Winnipeg, which, you know, I'm not complaining about. I really love my time in Winnipeg and being away from Winnipeg, my hometown, so much. The time is so sweet. Like, I got to spend some really quality time with my family and friends, and yeah, when you only have 3 weeks, you really make the most of it. And I have to say that that's probably one of the biggest gifts of getting laid off, was that just undivided quality time with my friends and family. Like, I got to go out with my mom during the day and run errands, which is probably my mom's favorite thing to do, is like just go run errands. Like, we went to the mall, we went for lunch, we went to the doctor's office. Like, we just literally did errands. And I love just doing life with the people that I love, because it's in these little mundane activities where, I don't know, you just feel close and you feel at home doing those things. So it was a real gift, actually, to be able to spend those 3 weeks without having to think about work at all. But the point I was trying to make here, I'm not a stranger to unemployment or times of unemployment, free space. So I wanted to be very intentional with it. So coming out of that busy 3 weeks and into this season, and actually one of the things that I'm thinking about now is when I was in Winnipeg and kind of reporting this news back to the people in my life, my mom, my good friends, that kind of thing. The feedback that came back to me on like, oh, so here's this life event that happened to me. I got laid off and blah, blah, blah. What came back was, oh, Kat, we're not worried about you. Like, even my mom, we're finally at this point where she looked at me and she said, you know, Kat, you've had so much job loss and job change over the last couple of years. She said, I'm not worried about you. And then we got into actually this really sweet conversation about happiness and that money isn't everything and that you should just enjoy your life. And it was like a really sweet moment with my mom, which, you know, 3-4 years ago, we certainly couldn't have that conversation. So I'm very grateful that my relationship with my mom and my family has gotten to that point. And I'm certainly on a tangent now because I was trying to get to this thing about intention. But you know what? Again, if you're here on the podcast with me, that's just, you just get what you get. All right. The thoughts are coming and I'm telling them to you. And that's how we're doing things here. So my intention coming into this next season. So, you know, at some point I knew I was going to be in Tulum. Eric and I had chosen this place as our next stop in our nomadic lifestyle. We're here for a month. We actually ended up extending for another month. So I'll be here for 2 now, which is so nice. The kind of joke that is going on between Eric and I is like, are we on a wellness retreat? Like, I think we're just on this wellness retreat. So my intention coming in was to be very mindful of my time. And one of the things that I found to be somewhat difficult while working in a corporate job is having ownership of my mornings. So a lot of times my first meeting of the day will be 11 or 12. And it doesn't leave a ton of space for all of the things I want to do in the morning. And I'm one of those 5 a.m. morning people when I'm in my best routine. I would say I'm like a 6 a.m.er. So there were a lot of times in the past where I look at the times where I felt the most myself or the most healed or whatever. And I know that my favorite times are in the morning. I get my best work done at that time. And I don't mean like capitalist productive work. I mean like ideas and inspiration and things that I can bring into community. Every good idea, well, I won't say good idea, but every inspired idea that I had, I can recognize this pattern in myself, always came in a moment of stillness. And a lot of times happened in the early morning before kind of the rush of the day started. So my intention coming in really was like, okay, let's recraft these morning practices again, and really focus on being well. And that means sleeping well, eating well, and moving my body. So mornings around here look like this. The alarm goes off at 7, about 2 weeks of the month. So we're 3 weeks in. You know, if you are someone like me and you're very hyper aware of your menstrual cycle, like I'm 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So for the first 2 weeks, I was getting up early. I was up before the alarm. My 6 a.m. body clock was getting me out of bed really early. And like, mind you, I'll still kind of like hit the snooze, quote unquote, because my alarm is actually not set, but you know, just kind of roll around in bed for the first 15-20 minutes and then I actually get up. But you know, starting the days early, meditating, journaling, getting the coffee going, everything just felt really rituous. And I really, really like the idea of us gifting that time to ourselves before the craziness of the day starts, right? So mind you, like I don't have meetings or a boss down my throat or on my case or whatever, but I really like the idea of no matter what happens next, no matter what comes next, what job, what activity, whatever, the mornings are sacred. And you know, once you get those repetitions in, it makes it easier to repeat it. And I just want to get to a point where
my default is this, where this becomes my non-negotiable. And I think it really has to be a commitment to those repetitions. So yeah, I've been pretty good the last 3 weeks in terms of getting up early, meditating, reading Babylon, which is, we'll get into that a little bit later, but I've picked up, Babylon by Leni Strobel, and oh, it's such a good read. I've had it for years and I just was not ready for the lessons until now. So, you know, I didn't rush into that one, but I'm so grateful that I packed it with me this time. So reading that, getting to the gym, eating well, cooking all of our meals. Like, I'm really also kind of on a spend detox, which is kind of unintentional, but just the area that we ended up in Tulum, we don't want to go out and do bougie things, and just been cooking all the time and we don't really go out. So it's been really healing to have a lot of inward reflecting time. And again, I'm someone who's self-aware of the fact that, like, my best, most inspired work comes from moments of stillness. And if there's something that I want to gift myself and something I want to encourage or inspire any of you to do too, is to create more opportunities for that stillness. And I actually want to read one of the excerpts from my journal, which feels really intimate, but you know what? I'm gonna do it anyways. The reason why I think the stillness piece is really important, and you know, without a job, without a career to define kind of who I am, and I'm just doing little air quotes with my hands, little air quotes, without a job to define who I am and what I do to the outside world. Yes, we just had this whole episode on like untethering career from my identity. I still feel lost though, right? We also talked in that episode about those 10 buckets, right? Like the 10 parts of my identity, just a number picked out of thin air, but like, okay, imagine 10 buckets and career is one of them, and it just suddenly drops out of my hand, right? There's still going to be an imbalance. Like, I'm still going to be fumbling around a little bit, and that's okay. Like, I'm giving myself permission to feel fumbly and feel confused and lost and not knowing the answers. I think I also just want to invite this thought that there's safety in that unknowing, in that uncertainty. And I think that there's a lot of examples in our lives in terms of, you know, the survivalist mentality that a lot of us have had to have, being, you know, immigrants to a certain place, you know, lots of layers to this. But what I want to invite that thought that you're safe to be uncertain sometimes. So excellent segue actually to the next little piece here. This very intimate thing that I'm going to do is read my journal entry to you, because this is a journal entry from January 17th, so like almost 2 weeks ago now, and still rings true today. But at that time specifically, I was reflecting on being in this place of uncertainty, feeling a little bit lost, feeling a little bit fumbly, feeling like a beginner again, and just being okay with that. So here's what I wrote that morning. Anytime I'm in a place of uncertainty or unknown, I hear a message to return home. Yesterday, I felt myself succumbing to boredom and fear around being bored and doing nothing and not being commercially productive. I felt myself longing for answers. Guidance. What comes next? This morning, I meditated over my Babylon book, asking my ancestors to communicate any messages they had to me in the pages of this book. I looked up at the sky, watched the clouds align, and flipped open the book. I flipped two pages over to the next chapter, and it was a story about a woman who was visited by her ancestors in a dream. She was seeking answers about what grad program to attend. And in her dream, her ancestors delivered silent messages through ceremony with the message, "Return home." I feel a lot of peace and calm and certainty around this message, and lately I have been feeling this call to go home. Batanga San, My Journey to Wholeness, which is a copy of the title of this excerpt from the book, "Maybe this part of me that feels uncertain is longing to visit home."
Okay, so that's the end of that very intimate activity of reading part of my journal to you, which I really don't mind. I think maybe we'll do more of that in future episodes. But the reason I want to share this is I really liked this entry because the fact that I sat and asked for answers and then flipped open a book to this exact page to me feels like it just could not be a coincidence. So I don't know. I think the message for me is a reminder that I'm not alone in any of this, that we are not alone in any of this, and that the answers are available to us if we're willing to receive them, open to receive them. You know what I mean? So I thought that was a really nice moment of stillness and reflection. And I just know that I need those times, those times to just ask the questions and then be still enough to hear the answers. And what's great about this too is that it really inspired greater education and almost like this self-study. I'm diving more into Bab Island and the stories within it and this idea of healing soul wounds and this idea of soul loss and grieving these things that I don't even recognize as being lost, but there is like this empty feeling, right? And I think that part of the uncertainty and part of the fear that I might be feeling now has something to do with these things. I don't have the answers yet, but I'm just sharing where I am in that education and in that learning and unlearning, in case you are also on a similar journey of learning. But again, I think the great part about this is that it has inspired kind of greater levels of reflection, because again, in this season of being soft and unhurried, but also at the same time acknowledging this uncertainty and unknown and a certain amount of fear around that, I almost want to label it as like a healthy amount of fear, as in I care about what happens next, not about like fear that something bad is going to happen or fear that the wrong thing is going to happen. Like, I just know it's going to unfold exactly as it's supposed to, but I think there's this fear because I care about it and I want to oh, this is interesting. Like, I almost want to control the outcome because I care about it. Does that make sense? Like, I want to be able to do the things that I want to do, fulfill the things that I feel need to be fulfilled without overly controlling the outcome. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it takes a lot of courage to just sit back and, you know, let go of the reins a little bit, right? Like, what's the word I'm looking for? Detaching from outcome and not trying to control it, but still taking care of the things that are happening right now, you know? So with this study, with this kind of self-study, soul study that's happening, I've been reflecting on kind of this question of what's next. And to be honest, when I started journaling on this question of what's next, it felt really scary because it felt lonely. Like, what's next for me? What am I gonna do? How am I going to make money? What is, you know, lots of I-centered, me-centered questions. And when I think about who I am and who I want to be and who I think I am out in the world, I knew that the question had to change. And at some point within my reflections, the question kind of morphed from what's next for me to what's next for us. And I really love this change in question. I think it softens the question a little bit in the way that I don't feel so alone in, you know, the thought around what has to happen next or what am I going to do or this and that. But I think it also invites Kapla into the equation, right? Like, there's a couple layers to this. So the first one is I really consider the work that I want to do, the work that's important to me, to be our work, right? Like, I look at Tita Talks, I look at Reclaim Your Wealth, and that's not a me project, that's a us project, right? Like, this is for community, and I know that for me it's important to be in service, but not in the ways that we've been kind of conditioned to be selfless, like giving too much in our service. Like, I actually know that my place in community, my place in perhaps my lineage even, is to be someone who is in service and not out of obligation or anything, but because I think that's just who I want to be and who I've always meant to be. And that's kind of how we keep the ecosystem of community and Kapwa going, is that we just kind of are all equitably in service to each other. So there's that layer of it. The question of what's next for us feels correct because of who I want to be and the type of work that I want to do. It's us work. It's not me work. And then the second kind of layer to what's next for us is that it just invites other people into the equation, right? Like, it's more collaborative in its spirit. It's what's next for us in community, what's next for us in partnership, what's next for us in, you know, going through this journey together. In all of the ways, that question just feels more supportive. It feels softer. I like the language of it. And I think the language and the way that we talk to ourselves is really important. So if that helps in even your own reflections, it doesn't necessarily have to be like what's next for yourself or what's next for us. But if there are things that you're reflecting on from like a I or me centered kind of position or questioning, maybe it would help to change it into us or community focused or Kapwa focused, however you want to kind of put that. But that's kind of what I wanted to offer there. And the next little piece of reflection too is, again, kind of building off this idea of community goals and putting that at the center of trying to plan or trying to vision what's next is, I really like this question that I ask myself in my journal, is what is my place in our collective remembrance? I'm just going to say it again. What is my place in our collective remembrance? So very much inspired by reading Babylon. And, you know, I also think about my previous work with Reclaim Your Wealth and how a big part of that workshop is actually just remembering that we can like tap into this ancestral knowledge, ancestral power. And what I'm learning through Babylon is that there are things that are lost that we're not even aware of. So my question was, what is my place in our collective remembrance? So I think any person who does work in community this way is helping us to remember our inherent powers. So I think that's a really sick question to ask ourselves as a community. Like, we all have a place in it. And I think that can take a lot of different forms. So wanted to offer that reflection prompt. And the last reflection prompt that I wanted to offer here is, whatever comes next, I have to love it before anyone else gets to. And again, like, I think the language is important here. So I think it's easy for me to get caught up in creating something that feels commercially successful. I also recently audio read, I won't say read because I didn't actually physically read the book, but I audio read The Creative Act by Rick Rubin. And the thing that really stayed with me is creating something that you love first before anyone else gets to love it. And the reason why I like this so much is because it detaches from the outcome and it
detaches me from this pressure of creating something that needs to be liked by other people or needs to be consumed by other people. And again, if this end goal is community-based, couple-based, like, what's next for us? I don't want to get caught up in this idea that, like, it needs to be sold to us, right? I think if something resonates with me and I really like it, then whoever it finds and it aligns with, like, that's just who needs it at the time, right? Like, I don't think that I should ever try to force myself into different mediums or ways of doing things because I'm looking left and right at other people and how they are, quote unquote, doing things successfully. Because I know that that wouldn't be true to the way that I want to do things or the things that I like. And that's big generator energy. So if you study human design at all, I'm a generator. So apparently my entire job is just to do the things that make me happy and joyful. And that actually just attracts all the people. So maybe it's my inner generator talking, but I do think that that's a nice sentiment to think about, just creating the things that I want to see in the world, that I really like, that I probably needed when I was younger. And actually, that really is the inspiration for a lot of the community spaces that I've hosted or created, or kind of any of the work that I've done, is that I'm just trying to create the resourcing that could have made the difference for me coming up, or that I need today, right? So again, just this idea of, like, whatever comes next, I have to love it first. The priority is I like it. And I think that there's a certain sustainability around that too, because if you actually really love the thing that you're doing, won't it just be easy to do, right? Like, I'm saying it back to myself, like, oh my God, it's so obvious and it's hard to do in practice. But yeah, liked that last little reflection prompt there. So I'm really happy to share these, I guess, like, morning practices of stillness, examples of stillness, and prompts for reflection. But don't take it as a call to do anything with it. I think we're still in the dead of January. This is the first time I'm ever spending a January outside of Winnipeg. And if you've been to Winnipeg, if you live in Winnipeg currently, January and February are brutally cold, and this is the first time I'm not in the cold, so I think there also is this level of privilege that I have in giving this information because I'm in a hot place, and I know that the short days and the cold days are really tough on, I know it for me, really tough on my mental health. So this is not a call to do anything. It's actually quite the opposite. It's actually a call to soften into this season. And these reflection prompts, these practices are really meant to just invite that softness in it, right? Like, how can we kind of reframe some of these reflection prompts and the ways that we're approaching our mornings to invite more ease, more softness, and not be in such a hurry all the time. So whatever season you're in, I hope you are well. I hope you are getting well and you're prioritizing your wellness. If there are journal prompts that you are using these days or kind of wellness practices that are helping you through this January cold season, or maybe it's not cold where you are, but I even think hypothetically, metaphorically, I think that's the word I was looking for. Metaphorically, it is, you know, winter still, even if it's not cold where you are. If there are any practices that you are doing, I would love to hear them. Please always share them with me. That's all for this episode today on inviting more softness and unhurriedness into this season, and I'll catch you at the next Teacher Talks.
Baby, I know you like to be. mission. Act me like I'm in a mansion. That's my tiny, tiny vision. Every partition got me every breathing. In my legs in the shoulder, I'm screaming.
Hey, you should give it all to me like I'm really old. We need to make more videos. You know I like it how traffic in Manila is. When you hop on top and you get real close, ride it really slow. Not just any old, I'm a top styler. I'm a real boy, but I'm not childish. Had to shake my dog away, still a Rottweiler. Said you got a man, make you opt out it. I'ma slide in real slow like molasses. Locate your spot with no address. Fuck it up, I like it ratchet. Keep throwing it back like it's past tense. Like ooh-wee, ooh-wee. Now we gon' make a movie, movie. In the zone like 2-3, 2-3. Legs spread like 2-3, 2-3. Hey.
Got your phone. Place. Yeah.
Magandang hapon sa inyong lahat. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jamarin Reyes. I am a youth leader and community organizer here bringing you important news back home in the Philippines. The article is from Time with a title, In the Philippine Presidential Polls Looking to 2028, Duterte's daughter is already the front runner. 2024 may be the world's biggest ever election year, but in the Philippines, voters are already looking ahead to 2028. While current President Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr., elected in mid-2022, hasn't even reached his second year in the office yet, but the country's constitution currently permits only a single presidential term of 6 years, opening up early speculation about whom his successor may be. And based on the new poll provided by Time on Thursday by local public opinion firm WR Number Research, Vice President Education Secretary Sara Duterte Carpio, the daughter of former President Rodrigo Duterte, appears to command a significant lead. Almost 36% of respondents to a survey of Filipino adults in December said they would vote for Duterte Carpio if elections were held now. This follows a privately commissioned poll conducted by statistics from social weather stations last July that also showed Duterte Carpio as the most preferred candidate. Duterte Carpio, now 45, had already been leading presidential surveys in 2022, but surprised everyone when instead she chose to be Marcos Jr.'s running mate, creating an election powerhouse that practically shut down any chances by the opposition to win. In the Philippines, the president and vice president are elected separately. Duterte Carpio won the vice presidency in 2022 with 32.21 million votes or 61.5% of the vote cast, more than Marcos Jr., who won the presidency with 31.62 million votes or 58.7% of the total votes cast at the same time. Of the country's four highest-ranking officials, including Senate President and House Speaker, Duterte Carpio also currently has the highest approval ratings. Both Marcos Jr. and Duterte Carpio have struggled to address the mass killings that happened under the leadership of their fathers. Rodrigo Duterte was the architect of the nationwide drug war that killed tens of thousands, while the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos Sr. oversaw a period of corruption and human rights abuses from 1965 to 1986. Yet the two former leaders' children enjoy massive domestic popularity, in part due to pervasive disinformation campaigns as well as the undying influence of political dynasties in the Southeast Asian country. The article was written by Chadi Guzman and published on January 26, 2024. Thank you so much for listening. Maraming salamat sa pakikinig. Once again, this is Jarmarin Reyes delivering you Philippine news from abroad.
Cha-da-cha-cha-da-da, waigugma. Cha-da-ma, higugma, intay. Di dahil sa nasaktan ka na.
nasaktan ka na.
Kung sa nais kong
Magiging akin, di ka na muling luluha pa. Pangakong di ka lolokohin ng puso kong nagmamahal. Kung ako ay papalari, na ako'y iyong mahal na rin. Pangakong ikaw lang ang iibigin. Magpakailanman di kita pipilitin. Sundin mo ba ang iyong damdamin? Hayaan na lang tumibok ang puso mo para sa akin. Ako ay mamalasi at meron ka ng ibang mahal. Ngunit patuloy ang aking pag-ibig. Magpakailanman di kita pipilitin. Sundin mo pa ang iyong damdamin. Hayaan na lang tumibok ang puso mo para sa akin. Di kita pipilitin. Sundin mo ba ang iyong hayaan na lang tumibok ang puso mo. Hindi kita pipilitin. Sundin mo ba ang iyong damdamin? Hayaan na lang tumibok ang puso mo para sa akin. Silence, silence, palace, coexist.
Long live Palestine. Good hump day afternoon, mga kapwa. At salamat for tuning in to Radyo Kapwa on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Laura speaking, and today we played songs by Denise Julia, Mai Mai Entrata, TJ Monterde, Bel Mariano, Jason Dacal, and the Palestinian Youth Movement in Toronto. If you missed it, you may find the playlists containing all the songs ever played on Radyo Kapwa on ckut.ca/playlists/ry within the following days of the episode release. Now, we've reached the last part of our show, so get your calendars ready for this week's community announcements. First off, Black Mental Health Connections has opened registration for their peer support groups. They're offering 2 10-session-long peer support groups running from January 29th and 30th to April 8th and 9th, 2024. These are no-cost groups. They aim to break the stigma and shame associated with mental health and create an anti-oppressive, harm-reductive space for cathartic release, community building, and skill sharing. BMHC's peer support programming is remote and offered over Zoom. To register, visit their Instagram page at BMHC to find the link. Next up on January 30th, join the Black Mental Health Connections Montreal and Vent Over Tea for a 3-part event series called Building Community from Care to Action. This series will run from October 2023 to March 2024 and invites you to explore the essence of community care, the significance of genuine connections with ourselves and others, and how these relationships can drive meaningful change. To register, head over to their Instagram pages at BMHC and at VENTOVERTEA for the link. Up next, this Saturday, February 3rd, bring your camera, digital or film, or just your phone, and join Involved Youth for a queer photography workshop where they will experiment what the queer gaze is. The workshop will be facilitated by Lawrence Philomen, a non-binary artist from Montreal who creates colorful images and video work informed by their lived experiences as a chronically ill transgender person. Their practice celebrates trans existence and studies identity as a space in constant flux via highly saturated, cinematic, and vulnerable images. For more information or to register, visit their Instagram page at Jeunesse Engagée Involved Youth, spelt as GEUNESSEENGAGEEINVOVELVED. YOUTH. That was a mouthful, but it is worth it. A few days later, on Monday, February 5th, P10 Montreal and Transpatient are providing a workshop for a practical guide and critical analysis of a medical transformation in Montreal for young adults aged 18 to 25 years old from 5 to 7:30 p.m. at 0138 La Jeunesse, Suite 301. learn how patients are mobilizing to provide mutual aid and advocate for better care. Come share your transition experience with fellow patients. To know more, visit their Instagram pages at P10 Montreal and Trans Patients. On the following day, Tuesday, February 6th, save the date, Kapwa, because on February 6th at 8 p.m. EST, you can join Cambio & Co.'s virtual event, Solidarity for Palestinian Liberation, a Philippinex community learning circle. In partnership with Dr. Robin Magalit Rodriguez, a.k.a. at Mad Professora of Liberating Education. We'll explore the history of Palestinian struggle and Asian American solidarity. This free event features a brief presentation followed by breakout discussions. Beforehand, we do recommend enrolling in the free Solidarity for Palestinian Liberation mini course. This event is perfect for those seeking a safe space for learning and dialogue, not for debates. For more information, follow their Instagram page at cambio_co and at liberating.education. Cambio & Co., spelt as CAMBIO_CO, and Liberating Education, spelt as LIBERATING EDUCATION. On the same day, February 6th, P10's presenting their last free support group that is for Black, queer, trans adults from 18 to 25 years old, facilitated by Léa Lagier in collaboration with BMHCMTL. Every session will be held in both French and English. They will be held at the P10 office situated at 10138 La Jeunesse Suite 301. And there are only 10 spots available. So check out their Instagram page to sign up at P10 Montreal, spelled as P10MONTREAL. And lastly, McGill University PhD student candidate John Wayne De La Cruz is still looking for participants in his research study exploring how multilingual Filipino immigrants in Montreal use their languages to construct their linguistic identities in various settings. You will receive a $120 e-gift card for your participation. For more information, please send him an email at john.delacruz@mail.mcgill.ca or his Instagram page at Lady Gaga's Godson. That was it from me. I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. As always, this has been Laura from Hiraya Productions, Radio Kapwa, Centre Kapwa, and Mabuhay! Liberation for one is liberation for us all. Tuloy ang laban.
PD and Production Nuit d'Afrique present Women of the World Raise Their Voices. 5 special concert evenings from February 1st to March 8th. Don't miss the grand premiere. Lidl's Cameroonian Slam, Brazilian songwriter Bia Pereira, Lorraine Classen's 40-year career anniversary, The Roots Daughters Sound System, and Cora Virtuoso, Sona Jobarte. Discover the full program on Festival Nuit.
Yo, check 1, 2, this is Flavor Flavor, Public Enemy, and you're listening to CKUT and the place to be from the bottom to the TOP.
Black Theater Workshop presents the world premiere of Diggers by Donna Michelle St. Bernard. Abdul and Solomon introduce Nubi Ba to the intricacies and dignity of grave digging. But when illness hits their town, they must make the best of a bad situation. Full of song, laughter, tears, and beautiful humanity, Diggers is a tribute to essential workers. Catch Diggers at the Siegel Center Studio from February 1st to the 17th. Get your tickets at siegelcenter.org or call 514-739-7944. More information at blacktheaterworkshop.ca. This is a Black Theater Workshop and Prairie Theater Exchange co-production and CKUT co-presentation.
De ton ami qui saignait du nez après qu'il soit rentré dans une porte patio fermée, sans rire de lui?
Évidemment.
Avec ton empathie, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
All the way live radio. With Widget and my man Pro V.